Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
And this is Abe Thompson coming to you on the New Cyber Frontier podcast here from the SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs. Today's podcast, I have the privilege of having Mr. Rick Ross with us, a CISSP cyber professional, background in strategic planning. Has a very varied career, and so I'm going to let him tell some of his story and share some of his heart here in cybersecurity. Good morning, Mr. Ross. How are you doing?
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Abe.
It's a delight. So how'd you end up here? What are you up to these days, and what's next for you?
Yeah, so, the way I ended up here, like you said, I have a kind of varied career, so kind of an odd way of getting into cyber. I think I'm not unique into that, but I started out in the Air Force active duty as a space guy and, worked that for a lot of years, but got off active duty after 4 years. And in my civilian job, started out supporting space things, but always had an interest in IT and programming and all that. So I kind of worked my way along that, ended up managed to kind of weasel myself into some jobs doing some IT and started getting a name for that. Ended up getting hired in, doing programming and things. Found out, I don't really like programming that well. So I thought, let's try, traditional IT. And as I got into that, got more into the security end of it because that always interested me. And then on the Air Force side, I went into the reserves as a space guy, but good friend knew my civilian background being in IT and IT security and managed to get me over into the Air Force cyber operations. And so I've been there for the past 4 years doing offensive cyber for the Air Force on the reserve capacity and then kind of blue teamer on the civilian side.
And so we've definitely come a long way just on the DoD side in defining cyber roles, with Cyber Command, of course, now having a seat at the table with the trigger pullers and everyone else, and so that's been significant. Air Force has done a great job. I grew up in the Navy side of that. Yeah. And you're now with SAIC, is that correct?
Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was with my career mainly with CyTOR, if anybody's familiar with CyTOR Corporation. Mm-hmm. I was with them for 18 years before we got bought by SAIC, and so been with SAIC for 4 years now.
Sure. Yeah. Keeps you busy, and the unique role too that you have is to kind of flow in between two strong components of the industry, really the DoD world, and then some DoD contracting, but still in a corporate setting. What have you been able to glean from kind of living in both worlds?
Interesting, because I've been able to kind of take pieces of both worlds and apply it to the other. Because on the civilian side, I was always I've been corporate IT. I haven't been on contract. I've been working for the company, so we have a lot of classified networks. CyTOR was primarily working with the intel community. SAIC's got a lot more DoD as well as with intel. So you can take the experience you get there as a blue teamer and then take it over to my Air Force side. Okay, we've got offensive guys, so I know how I'm defending, and then I'm working with guys that are trying to break in, and then conversely, know what the guys can do offensively, and okay, here's what I kind of need to defend against on the corporate side.
And, the corporate sector often doesn't get to hear much about the offensive side, and understandably, but certainly a lot of lessons to be gleaned. Now, a little birdie named LinkedIn tells me that you're not a couch potato by any stretch. You've done the Boston Marathon, is that correct?
I have. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I've run 5 marathons. That was my 5th one. I haven't done one in a few years, but yeah. That was quite an experience. That was kind of a bucket list, whenever I got into to running marathons. Out of all the big ones out there, that's the one that I wanted to do.
Well, certainly. It's something to qualify even for that race. What does it take to get in?
The time that I did it, at my age, it was a 3:25, I think, and I got in at like a 3:19 or something like that.
Wow.
And so I actually PR'd at Boston. That was my best marathon yet.
Well, that's fabulous.
Yeah.
I probably did a marathon in a car in about 3:19. We're probably level in that accomplishment. But no, certainly a great experience to be around a number of folks. And certainly some leadership lessons, I would imagine, both in the discipline it takes to do that and then in your career. What are some of your sort of core philosophies on leadership that you've kind of brought from all those aspects?
Yeah, actually, you know, from a leadership perspective, I'll tell you, I'm a collaborative leader. Yeah. I believe in teamwork. And I think we were talking, I was talking with Chris before we came in, and how our community tends to be a little bit more introverted, and I'm definitely that. And, you know, you kind of want to hold off and do your own thing and sit behind your computer screen. And that's really not the way I work. I like bringing a team together. I really like sharing of ideas. And everyone has a valued opinion and everyone contributes. And so that's the way I work. And then the other part of applying the, you know, the marathoning to it is I'm definitely believe in persistence. And it's actually one of the things whenever I interview people, one of the questions I always ask is, you consider yourself a marathoner or a sprinter? And they both bring value, you know. Sure. I mean, as a marathoner, you know, you're in it for the long haul, you're going to persist, you know, no matter how bad it gets, you know, you're going to dig through and you're going to finish it. You know, as a sprinter, you know, sometimes, especially in today's world, everybody's into agile. And so, you know, you've got to knock this out quick. You know, so there's value to both. I'm more in favor of the slow and steady, and, you know, let's just knock this out. You know?
Two great pictures for sure in terms of leadership. Let's take a quick break and go to our sponsor.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And we're back with the new Cyber Frontier. This is Abe Thompson here at the SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs. I'm here with Mr. Rick Ross. Rick, you were talking a bit about how you brought in lessons from both your military side and your marathon side, and you had started this really interesting discussion about distinctive lessons to learn from those fast twitch guys like me, the sprinters and the distance runners. Pick up on that if you would.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, and I was thinking as you were saying that, you know, part of the, you know, because me being a marathoner and digging in, you know, I've got that side too, you know, with the sprinters where, you know, sometimes you've just got to knock something out, you know, especially in the DOD community, which I just came off of a little over 2 years on full-time military orders. And you know, with the bureaucracies, nothing moves fast enough. And so you've got to apply that kind of sprinter mentality. Come on, guys, we got to move. Let's just knock this out. But at the same time, you know, that's just one small piece. And there's a bigger picture that you have to kind of keep your eye on the end prize.
For sure.
And same way in marathon, you got surges, you know, you got times where you kind of lay back, you're hurting a little bit, and, you know, then you recover and you push on again.
You know, I think the closest I can come to a marathon is one of my best buddies is ran the 2004 Olympics in Athens, you know, and that's quite a race. And he lent me some shoes. So I actually wear the shoes of a marathoner when I'm at the gym. But boy, his whole, you know, when he kind of talks about his experiences, he was at West Point, he was actually, you know, active duty, and he's now one of the Olympic coaches. You know, he talks about that persistence and also that ability to finish strong. And so a lot of great lessons. And so that's really played into this diversity of career for you with Air Force and the reserves and even space and then cyber. And so pretty well-rounded. So what keeps your focus most significantly these days in your career?
So right now, you know, it's funny. I'm actually in a transition. Like I say, I just wrapped up at the end of March 2 years on full-time military orders. So I'm moving back into my civilian career, and which is a different focus because on the civilian side, you're not doing offensive cyber. And so I'm kind of getting my mind back into the defensive world. I'm, you know, right now, as I'm waiting to find out where I'm going to land, I'm helping out with a lot of our security assessments because the company has, I think, probably 80-something different classified systems around the country. So so we're trying to get our hands around how we're going to keep ATOs going, how we're going to, you know, keep you know, the right security postures and everything on that. So that's what I'm kind of helping out with right now, traveling around, taking a look at where they're at and how they're doing.
And that would certainly lend itself to an understanding then of compliance and risk management framework. And for those of you on the civilian side out there, that approval to operate, you know, certainly carries you know, just as much credence for all of you out there because there are compliance requirements. What is sort of what is this RMF discussion and even the GDPR, if you've been exposed to it, what has this all done in the compliance realm?
Yeah, fortunately, I don't have to deal with any European things, so no GDPR.
Yeah,
but yeah, RMF, you know, it's been around for a few years now, and I can't say I'm by any stretch an expert in it,
sure.
You know, but I think it's getting better, and you know, it's, you know, definitely a move in the right direction, kind of more in continuous monitoring and things like that, and a good
sure.
baseline. But, you know, I'm sure there's still more to do. You can always make something better. But yeah, RMF, it can create challenges. From what I'm seeing now, I think with people putting out, you know, good overlays, you can kind of knock out your packages and get your good baseline security down pretty easy. I think the big thing we need to do as a community is not rely on, hey, we've done our RMF package, we've got our ATO, we're compliant, hey, we're good to go, because, you know, one of the things I like to do is go to hacker cons and things like that, and one of the big buzzwords, you know, or catchphrases, you know, compliance is not security, and I think we need to remember that. You know, the bad thing when you're corporately, you know, your IT staff and your security staff is usually pretty lean, so sometimes about all you can do is get that baseline security compliance in, you know, stick something out,
yeah,
and sit back on that. But I don't think in today's world that just really doesn't work. That, you know, that's not enough.
It's never enough.
So, yeah, I need to figure out how to take that to the next step and really look at a more holistic security posture for your different systems.
Well, you'd mentioned continuous monitoring. That in itself, you know, doesn't let you rest on your laurels. Mm-hmm. So, what does that look like in terms of maybe a sea change in organizations?
You know, I think that, you know, what I'm seeing is I think that companies really need to invest a little bit more in their IT and security staff. Because, you know, especially when you have a lot of classified systems that are generally standalone, you can't really support those. You definitely can't support them remotely. So that requires you, you know, if they're geographically dispersed, you've got to have at least local, if not geographically local, you know, support staff to take care of those, because if, you know, you've got to do it continuously, you've got to keep patches, AV, all your documentation reports and everything going. You know, it used to be, you know, years ago, you know, you had an inspection coming up, and we were always good about keeping up with things, but you definitely spent the last month before an inspection, okay, is everything, you know, running through checklists and
sure.
kind of like, you know, in the DOD side, before you have an ORI, everybody's cramming to get ready, and it's like, why aren't we ready all the time?
Right. Yeah. Well, and one of the things I became concerned about even back in the active duty days is when we started to decentralize IT support and in turn some of the security, you know, it became, you know, you had to call out for it and wait for the guy to come. And as, you know, in the commander realm, when you're running your unit, you like somebody you can touch. Have you seen some of that decentralization occur on the cybersecurity side, or?
So, you know, it's funny, I've seen it both ways, because with Cytor, we were a smaller company, so sometimes it's a little easier, but it was a company that really took it seriously. So we always, at least for our frontline IT staff, we didn't do a help desk or, you know, call center. We had people at each site, you know, as long as it was big enough. If it was a really small site, you wouldn't,
sure.
of course. But we always had staff on site, security,
yeah.
And IT.
Yeah.
So you had that responsiveness. Now, when you get to bigger companies, sometimes it's hard to scale,
sure,
if you've got
sure.
a lot of that. So, but I think it is important to have local staff, you know, at least like, you know, here in Colorado, because, you know, we've got offices here in the Springs, we've got, you know, sites up in Aurora and Denver,
yeah.
you know, and, you know, you can have, you know, one or two people that, you know, can drive back and forth and keep things going, but you've got to have a local presence.
Sure,
that's my opinion, and I'm sure not any big company that thinks
sure.
IT is a cost center might agree.
Well, and I think even the big companies would agree. It's just the feasibility and then the scalability, like you were saying. But, you know, one of the things that's often forgotten about our industry is the human component. And, you know, there is simply something that cannot replace that human element when it comes to this type of support, because really, as cybersecurity professionals, we're setting the stage, the standard, building the culture, and we're shepherding a security culture. You know, when I train our students here at SecureSet, one of the things we focus on is being those that influence and establish a security culture in the organization, mm-hmm. whether it's getting rid of those, you know, yellow stickies with passwords on your forehead, or, mm-hmm. you know, all the abundance of other things that we see,
yeah. Well,
for sure.
The guys on site, you know, you develop a relationship with your customers.
Yeah.
And so they're more likely to come to you if they have an issue or they have a question. They're not going to try to go do it on their own because they know they've got somebody there that's going to be responsive and help them out.
When we look at what's emerging in the cybersecurity industry, like with blockchain and some other things, really at a core, one of the fundamental concepts here is trust. And so, you know, trust is easier established, I guess, in the human interface that still exists.
It's all about a relationship.
Yeah. How do you sort of address that on an enterprise level, though, when you maybe can't have the same interface and relationship? How do you establish benefits that are similar on a larger scale?
So what we did, and of course, again, with a smaller company with Cytor is easy because I led our enterprise team, and those guys, you know, it is a small team, and they're doing all the kind of back-end stuff. But we traveled a lot, and so, you know, we had kind of distributed services. So our enterprise guys would travel out to other sites, and they also, it was a very open door, and people were not afraid to walk in and talk to them. You know, it was very much about establishing a relationship because I know whenever I would look to hire people, I would say at least 50%, maybe not more, of my judgment is on the person and how they're going to fit in with the culture. You know, you don't want the guy that's, you know, either, you know, closed off and sitting behind his computer all day and doesn't want to talk to people and, you know, or, you know, you want somebody that's open. And we were fortunate to have some really good guys that would just sit down with somebody and actually explain to them if they wanted to understand what was going on.
Yeah, being insular can often be deadly in our industry for sure. Let's take a quick break and visit our sponsor.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And we're back with the new Cyber Frontier. This is Abe Thompson, your host here at SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs with Mr. Rick Ross, who's been sharing from his varied career with both space and IT and the Air Force and the corporate sector supporting DOD. So let's say, Mr. Ross, you received a call from the White House and the president wants you to be his guy on cyber strategy. And you had to write sort of the executive order or the executive plan for the next, you know, several years. What might that include? What would be your charge?
So it's funny, you know, you asked that, Abe, because as I said, I just came off a little over 2 years on full-time orders with the Air Force. And what I did for the last year and a half is I led an offensive cyber operations PROTAF, a project task force. It was originally on behalf of the deputy commander at Air Force Space Command, but then Air Force moved cyber to Air Combat Command. So ended up being General Wegeman, the deputy there, as our customer. But we took a year to really study the Air Force, overall and with the offensive cyber mission specifically, but what does the Air Force need to do to advance their offensive cyber mission? Because we're really good about building capabilities. You know, we're all about the tech.
Right.
But what about the facilities, the funding, the manpower, you know, the everything that goes behind supporting that mission? How do we build that mission smartly? So we actually produced, and I will not take any credit for it, I just let it, but had some wicked, wicked smart guys working for me. But we produced a capability roadmap, for lack of a better term, looking at the past on how we got to where we are, what the current state is, and what the Air Force really needs to do over the next 1, 3, and 5 years to really get in the game in the offensive cyber mission. And so we just delivered that actually in March.
Wow.
To General Wegeman over at Air Combat Command, and he really likes it. So I'm hoping that will kind of be the foundations or the root of an Air Force strategy for offensive cyber.
Excellent. I know that you know, that's a big component for the future. And you continually mention something that's key. You mentioned good guys. I've got these great people. I've got these wicked smart guys. What types of people are they? What are their backgrounds? Where do they come from? What does it take to build them? I'm sure a lot of folks out
there. Yeah, it's funny because we had a lot of philosophical discussions on what it takes to be a good cyber guy. And it's funny because you had Andy Heo on a few months ago. So I know Andy very well. We worked together in reserves over the years. So Andy's a biology major, if I remember right. And it's kind of funny because our principal author on the paper that did most of the writing is actually a biology guy, I believe it's biology, had another guy. You know, we've got history guys, we've got political science guys. You know, they're not traditional IT tech guys. And so I think it's, you know, you really don't have to be super, super smart technically. I mean, you got to have that aptitude, of course. But if you look at like what Andy's point was, and also, you know, the guys on my team, you know, a biology major, when you're looking at interactions of organisms and things like that, that really is what you're doing in a global network. So it really is, I think, the person. And fortunately, I've got guys that are just really just strategic thinkers. I mean, that they can take a big picture and conceptualize it and everything. And then we had other guys that are just really smart with the details. So we had a very complimentary team. I was unbelievable. I was just awed to work with them day to day.
That's a fantastic capture. I mean, you know, one of the big things that I hear coming out of that is, you know, it's not one-dimensional anymore. No. We've broadened even the way we train here. I've got both an engineering track and an analytical track, and so we're talking about a need even for right brain thinkers, for creative out of the box thinkers, like you said, poli sci, probably some historians. And what does it take then, once you've, you know, got this diversity of talent, to bring them to a common baseline, to train them, and then set them on a unified mission?
So I think, you know, the Air Force is really good about that. You know, they've got common training pipelines on doing that. But I really think in our industry, you know, doing certifications are more important than degrees, I think. You know, doing your Security Plus and your CISPs, your CEH, you know, those kind of, and for me personally, what I like to do, I do a lot of online training. I try to go at least to there's a hacker con called DerbyCon back in Louisville, Kentucky. Unfortunately, this is the last year they'll be doing that. But I've always made a point to try to get to that every year and do training associated with that. I think that, you know, this is getting to be a better career field with more formal training, but there's a lot of OJT type training. And just really, you've got to have the initiative to spend time on the internet and wherever you can to research and do.
Such a great affirmation of, you know, core belief we have here at SecureSet as well, is that, you know, you need passion. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. With that passion comes some patience, because you're going to be doing a lot of time digging and searching and researching and learning. So you have to blend both of those. And I think passion begets patience, because if you love something, you stick with it to a decent outcome. And that sounds a lot like what you're doing. Certainly. Yeah. I'm a big fan of education, you know, at the 4-year level for its own purposes. But I think, as you've kind of indicated, the solution requires more diversity. What are some of the OJT models you've seen work the best?
The OJT, I think, really, I mean, there are so many things. Cyberary, you know, the things that you guys are doing. Well, this isn't really OJT what you guys are doing, but anything that you can get out, you know, you can get on YouTube. Adrian Crenshaw, you know, catalogs a lot of videos from HackerCons, and the HackerCon. I don't want to focus, you know, because they're really kind of pen tester guys, but I always looked at that with me. I'm not a pen tester, you know, don't really think that I would be very good at that, but I always looked at, as I'm a blue teamer, and I need to know what they're doing.
Sure.
So I can defend against it. And I will say that most of the conferences anymore are going to a really red team, blue team mix, where the guys are there to educate and to help you understand that if you're defending, here's what I can do, here's what I'm looking for when I'm trying to break in. It's a great community, very open and very sharing. And unlike others, I think that the guys really love to show what they know.
Well, that open and sharing also, I think, has probably an element of humility, because in order to receive the lessons in a blue team setting based on results from a red team evolution, you have to have some humility and willingness to hear some tough things. Mm-hmm. What have you found in terms of receptivity to some of the hard lessons that are learned after some red teaming?
I think everybody's really good about it. I mean, you know, you know, at least the people that I work with, I mean, they're very professional, and they understand that, you know, pen testers just got to get in one time. You got to defend it all the time. So, you know, they know things are going to happen, and everybody looks at it as a, how we can make it better. This is one of the things I was thinking earlier before I came in is one of the things that we did at SciTour that was very refreshing is our IT and security got along very well. Mm-hmm. I've seen places before where they're, I won't say adversarial, not so much, but they were very much, this is my lane, this is your lane.
Right.
We had a team. I mean, we sit down and we work together whenever we were trying to figure out, you know, how are we going to harden our systems? How are we going to do it? You know, they know the policy side of it. We know the technical side of it. So we come together and work out a plan. And we were very well received from our accreditors.
Good.
Because of how we did that.
Well, and it's a rare but important gift to be able to ensure that those two functions are distinct, but at the same time, you know, on the same team.
Exactly.
For sure.
You got to keep separation of duties. RMF
right.
definitely enforces right. that, because we see that across the board a lot is, you know, because we talked about the number of staff. So a lot of times you have guys that are on contract that are supposed to be doing a job, but they also have to be the admins. They also have to be the ISMs.
Mm-hmm.
And RMF is forcing that change. They're not going to approve your accreditation package if you don't have separation of duties, at least.
You know, you talked about having an enterprise role previously with SciTour. Reversing that a little bit, there are some smaller companies out here, you know, sort of the heartbeat of America type cybersecurity companies that are out here trying to grow and benefit and develop and strengthen. And obviously, they might not have the same access to sort of blue team and red team. Where would you send them to maybe build out their from some of those lessons that you learn in a red and blue team?
You know, that's how I don't know anybody that really consults mm-hmm. in anything like that. I know it's probably a personality driven thing. You're
okay.
probably hoping you can, you know, I think with a smaller company, you need to hire a person that's broad,
sure.
maybe not as deep, but they need to be broad.
A generalist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A little bit more, because, you know, and we were like that with SciTour for years. When I started with them, we were probably about a 300-350 person company. So you didn't have, you know, a frontline IT support staff and an enterprise staff and all this. I mean, it was just one staff, so everybody did everything. So you had a guy that, you know, like I might be supporting the office here in Colorado Springs, but I'm also, you know, the file and print server guy, or
yeah.
I'm also the Active Directory guy, or,
yeah.
And so the way that we did it is, yeah, we had guys that were generalists, and so if another site, you know, say my specialty was standing up an Active Directory server, then I would travel to that site and help them build their server and everything, and then I would come back home and then, you know, take care of my office.
Sure, sure. And certainly you're absolutely right. I think there may not be as many people sort of on the smaller scale providing that consultation. And so, you know, the charge really to the smaller companies is to bring in some of that expertise.
And for the people, actually, you know, we struggled a little bit whenever we got bigger and you had to specialize, because our guys liked they liked having different things to work on.
Yeah.
You know, because the community is getting so big and diverse now that you're kind of encouraged to specialize.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily, you know, a good thing personally from a satisfaction, you know, because I think, you know, you want to do it for a few years. Okay, I've been there, done that. What's the next thing? So it's nice to have, to be in a smaller place where you can generalize.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, as you kind of look to the next thing that you're back sort of full time at SAIC, what's on your horizon, you hope?
You know, I'm really hoping to get into leading a team again. You know, I'm sure it'll definitely be on the defensive side, you know, whether that be on contract or, you know, back with the corporate. But I'm really interested, before I was in, you know, on the IT corporate staff, I would really like to move more over into the CISO side of things.
Sure.
And take what I've learned over the past 2 years, well, you know, with the offensive mission, and apply that to an organization where I can say, hey, you know, we've been working with the guys that are breaking into things. You know, let's figure out how we can kind of protect against them.
Yeah, now that you bring some of those tools and experiences with you, and again, that's a perfect picture of how we leverage offensive and defensive as much as red team, blue team.
Yeah, the whole
for
capture
sure.
the flag concept and stuff, you know, where you're doing both. I mean, it's very enlightening.
Yeah, we love it. I see a lot of great community developed around our Capture the Flag events here in Colorado Springs, where people get to apply their wares and test their ability. And you really do grow and learn a lot when you're doing it.
You know, and for the guys, you know, have that techie side, you know, it's fun because it gives you a way to do that legally.
And it's
just fun, cool stuff. I mean, that's why when I started with IT, I immediately latched onto that. So, and that's how I really got it more in the security side, because I was so interested in the hacker community and kind of how they could do things. It's kind of like that, you know, how do you break this?
Do you find yourself wishing you had more time to get down into the weeds on the keyboard these days?
Oh, absolutely. I bought a server a few years ago, and I've got it sitting in the basement, and I always have it. It's like my plan. I've got a whole, you know, big thing on building the lab, you know, because, you know, you want to be able to keep doing that,
but
you've got to find ways to do it. And there are sites like Over the Wire, you know, that have some great things that you can run through and teach you.
So you definitely
it's just a matter of finding the time,
and you've got to get the missus typically to give you access to the basement or
that's true. Yeah, I've got my own room down there right now. My wife's trying to take it from me, but,
fight the power, my friend.
Exactly.
The power. Well, it's been my distinct pleasure to have here on New Cyber Frontier today Mr. Rick Ross, a varied career both in the DoD world as a space guy and as a cyber guy in the Air Force Reserves now. But also at SAIC, CITOR, you've got an important background, a varied background. Your heart's been in sort of the compliance, assurance, strat planning, and I've really appreciated your insights today, and sort of your call to bring in the right experience and to set yourself up for, you know, what's on the horizon if you're a company that's looking for help out there. Thank you again, Rick. Appreciate having you here with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Indeed. This is Abe Thompson here at SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs on New Cyber Frontier.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.